The following program is an abridged audio version of the streaming video talk show, A Wonderful Chaos. The hosts are Andy Chaliff and Bambos Dimitriou. The format is entirely casual, unscripted conversation. If you'd like to watch a live taping or participate with your comments in real time, subscribe to A Wonderful Chaos on YouTube, Facebook, Periscope, or Twitch.
It was hard preparing for this. I was wondering what the hell happened when I grew up. I dived into the DSM, the Bible of the Psychiatrist, and see if I can find a label for my mom. So.
And did you find one?
Yes, I did. I did.
Can you share that with us?
Yes, I will. It's sorry, mom.
Whisper it.
Why are you looking up?
I loved her and still do, but she was quite a difficult woman. And those are painful memories. But it's very hard to connect emotionally, because if I do, it's sheer pain. And I was, as a child, sheer pain. I have therapy. Still now, I find it so hard to admit my loneliness and my pain, my isolation. And the more I share, the more I feel included in the world. I feel connected to people.
It's a wonderful chaos. Beautifully random, messy and glorious.
Solo or tandem?
We work to find rest and fight to find peace. Both head and the heart.
Like a nephew and niece.
What are we doing here?
You mean listening to this show?
Where the more that you learn is the less that you know. Where the wounded are healers
and the atheists pray.
It's a wonderful chaos and we like it that way. It's a wonderful chaos and we like it that way.
Yes.
I am a manipulator and it's the fucking best.
Yeah, aren't we all? So nice to make peace with that, isn't it?
Yeah.
I really like that, and I want to give credit where credit's due. Today's show's title comes from Ronnie, because while we were walking around on our trip and I was talking to Jessica about doing this show, Ronnie says, why don't you call it Mama Manipulation?
Love it.
And I thought, yeah, that was it. So Jessica DeVries is on the show today. She's been begging me for months to come on the show.
That's such a load of bullshit.
To think of how
I ask her, how are you feeling being on the show? I fucking hate
that. I know. I love that we get people that like,
you manipulate them.
I manipulate them onto the show all the time.
But you know what?
It's
because they're susceptible to being manipulated in life.
Yeah.
So they easily say
interesting.
Yes.
So we're going to have that discussion as well. It was kind of funny because we had another show where, you know, we had the guest on who had trouble saying no, and everyone would always laugh. So, yeah, that's why he's on your show, because he couldn't say no to you. So with Jessica, certainly did not want to be here, like I'd say half of our guests. But yeah. She said, Andy, let's do it. Let's. She's I've known Jessica for, I believe, 15 years now. She was also close to my mentor, Case. So we took a journey with a similar and same mentor for many years. Mm-hmm. And she then started to do her own personal development work after Case died, like I did, writing my books and doing my little things here and there. You know, I've often felt like Jessica has had a rough life. Yeah. When I think about what I needed to overcome to make peace with myself, I'm often grateful that even though I had a lot of trauma, sometimes the foundation of just having a really strong, loving mom and having, you know, even my dad, although he was so aggressive, I did learn a lot from him. In some ways, I felt whenever I spoke with Jessica that she just didn't get necessarily role models around her. That was always my feeling. And it never felt good to hear her stories, because I always felt two sides. I felt like I didn't realize, I'd say, how good I had it until I heard how hard it would be if you didn't have the same support that I had.
Yeah.
And so I had two sides. Like, I was grateful again and again and again for my own mom and dad. And I had more compassion for someone who didn't have that support in their lives. And it's not all that long ago that Jessica's mom passed away. I knew it wouldn't be easier for her to be on the show. And she still has relatives alive that are also tangentially connected. But I thought it would be beautiful just to have a discussion and see how hard or challenging it was to grow up with a mom who herself had a lot of emotional issues. And Jessica, you know, wanting to figure out how to make it work with mom, as we all do, how she dealt with that, you know. And her grandma was there, comes from a Jewish family. Grandma was killed at Auschwitz. Her mom was sent off to a foster home when she was 3 years old from Vienna. And it's the trauma of that life impacted everything afterwards. And it's often we think, wow, it's the people that died in Auschwitz or the people who suffered. But really, it's the generation after generation that have the repercussions of those events, the suffering. And
because they hold on to the stories?
They hold. Well, I mean, if you think about it, all of the things that are like the, you know it from your life. I know it from my life. Everything my dad and my mom weren't able to make peace within themselves bled in to their relationship with their kids. In my case, me. In your case, you.
Yeah.
So then, and how that manifests is different for everybody. But the one thing we know, it's often that joke when I'm coaching a husband and wife that have children, and a lot of times it's like, why am I doing this personal development work? It's hard for them to get motivated to change something for themselves. But if you say to them, if you don't deal with this, there's going to be implications for your kids. And all of a sudden things change for them. A light goes off like, wow, do I want this generationally to continue going, or don't want to make peace with this so that another generation doesn't have to suffer? And that's been my take on it. Yeah. What comes up for you as I describe this?
Well, I can tune into my own personal past.
Yeah.
Story. Yeah. I can see where mama was completely incapable. Yeah, where I am today, I fucking love the woman.
Yeah.
After writing several love letters and
yeah,
meeting her where she is, not needing her to be anything else anymore.
Mm. Yeah.
So
it would be great to bring her on then.
I think we should bring her on.
Yes. There she is.
Yay.
In the spotlight.
Hi. I like the color anyway. It wow. Makes you pop out from the background.
Oh, great. Oh, do I?
Yeah, looks nice. Right,
yeah, I'm looking at any shirt, so I don't know if we ever met yet, yeah, but it's nice.
Yeah. So I always told Bambos we shouldn't ask this question, but I'm going to ask it of you. What's the question, you think?
Why did you say yes to be on the show?
Why did I say yes to it? Yeah. I was wondering if other people with a similar background would have, benefit from it.
Beautiful. And you know, I mean, I can name, like, I can already, like, on my hand start naming the people who have felt utterly manipulated by their mothers.
Yeah.
Like, this is so, it's so normal. And yet,
yeah,
people wouldn't call it that was the talk we had. We had a talk before you came on. And I said, because I remember telling you, isn't everyone manipulated by their, like, I said that to you, like, no, Andy, there's a difference. And you said, I can't even describe it to you. And I said, well, why don't we come on and figure it out while you're on the show?
It was hard preparing for this. I was wondering what the hell happened when I grew up. And even in writing stuff down, because I couldn't figure the stories and what happened. It's really, really weird. So I dived into the DSM, the Bible of the Psychiatrist, and see if I can find a label for my mom. So.
And did you find one?
Yes, I did.
Can you share that with us?
Yes, I will. It's sorry, mom.
Whisper it.
Why are you looking up?
Well, she's probably somewhere here. So yeah.
No, whisper it in the microphone. She won't hear it.
No, some personality disorder, and I found sort of two of them: a dependent personality disorder. I don't know it in English, but. I think people understand if they know. It's like and some not otherwise specified, and that has some characteristics of its own.
Mm.
So, yeah, and that was really quite confronting, because she never had a label. It was just, I loved her and still do, but she was quite a difficult woman. And everybody found that, but she never had a label. So, yeah.
Isn't it interesting? I've found for myself, once someone is diagnosed, there's more compassion for them.
Yeah. And the way it is, I had some very, very loud laughs. Can I say that? With someone next to my mom. She was there every week for work and stuff. And it appeared to be that people like my mom, born before the war, Jewish and victim of that war, all share the same characteristics. It's weird. She is, how do you call it in English, doelgroep. I don't know if you know.
Target group.
Yeah, the target group. Segment, yeah,
she was a target group. There were courses about those people. It's weird, but she never was labeled, and yet there was a lot of understanding in what was going on for them.
Wow.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, so to what degree, like, when did you begin to find out about your own family history? Because your grandparents were, your grandma was killed in Auschwitz, right?
I never not knew.
Oh, you never knew?
No, because that in lots of Jewish families, there's a secret, must not be talked about. But my mom was the opposite. And there's also a large group of people who only talks about that, the past, and keep the memory alive and know everything. She shoved it down my throat that I would know of my family history and become a proper Jew and love Israel and et cetera, et cetera.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you really, it's almost like, she shifted the, you didn't get the luxury of deciding who and how you wanted to be. She basically forced you to fulfill whatever she needed for her own.
Yeah.
What was behind that?
Yeah. What was behind? I think I know what I could imagine was behind it, but I'm curious what you found behind it.
Yeah. I'm curious what you think, but I'll tell. She wanted to have my grandmother to have a name and kept remembering. Remembered for being existed, and from that giving herself the right to exist. So it's all about the right to exist.
Yeah. When something dramatic happens, you try to give it meaning and give it some sort of identity going forward. So I kind of thought, wow, it appears that your mom said, hey, I'm going to give the loss and the death of my mother meaning by making sure that my daughter carries forward and remembers and memorializes and does all the things. So her life was lost in vain.
In a way, but that was not even not her goal. She had to do that and wasn't thinking about giving it meaning. It was her job or her, she didn't choose it. Like it chose her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She couldn't do anything else. Anything else. This was for her life.
So we have the subject manipulation, and how did that look like? Like, what is the thing that you experienced as manipulation without, as Burlang and J.C. Barnett say, it's not good or bad, but what was the actual experience observation?
And that was the hard part in preparing for this, because it is so hard to put this in words. I can remember. Maybe I can put it more in feelings than in what happened. As an adolescent, and I wrote that down, I got a few times hysterical because she was in my brain. She was in my mind. She was from mindfuck to mindfuck. It really, again, sorry, mom, but she came close to me and said, you're looking pale. Are you feeling well? And it was as if she was in me. And what I had to do was blocking my face, like, in a mask, being cold and logic after a few years when I discovered logic and I discovered what she did, and she shifted grounds. Like we were talking about one subject and all of a sudden she shifted underneath to another subject and reacted from there. So I freaked out. I really become hysterical, literally a few times.
Mm-hmm.
I was living at home still. I freaked out by her flipping away like a bar of soap. It was, that's horrible. That took a few years. Another situation. Yeah, I have stories apparently. I just had a burnout. I was 32 or 38, I don't know anymore, in my 30s, and I had a burnout. For 3 weeks, I was at home, and I was physically okay, but mentally, I had to decide, do I do my dishes or do I do groceries? And that's it. The only thing I could do was in the morning, put on my skates and go away, drink a cup of coffee and go home. And that was my day. And she called me and she said, oh, I had to have surgery on my eyes. I can't be alone for 2 weeks. And then waited for my response. And I said, no. She freaked out, really. We had a real fight. She didn't accept my no. Years later, only a few years ago, she apologized for that. She found the letters because I couldn't talk on the phone. So we write paper letters. There was no email yet. So a few years ago, she apologized for how selfish she was. So that was really, yeah, but she did.
Wow. There was another story that you wrote about. By the way, just to, for some context, so Jessica sent me because of this. She said she needed to write some. This was after or before? After our talk, I believe, right?
Yeah.
So basically, she wrote page after page of just streaming consciousness of what came up for her, thinking about the interactions with her mom and especially the topic.
Did something pop up for you?
And there was a few things in here. I mean, it was really beautiful, by the way. Like from a book perspective, I already just was reading it and I wanted to skim it. I'm like, oh. I'm digging into this a bit more. But the thing that I found interesting, I thought a lot of people can relate to this, and it's an intense level of manipulation in it, was the story about her phoning you when something happened and she heard that there was a bike accident. Like that. And I believe a lot of viewers will have a similar stories in their own life.
Yeah. When I just moved to Amsterdam, 13, 14 years ago, she called me a few times a day sometimes, like, oh, there's been a car accident with the bike. Are you okay? Oh, my God. Mom, I'm 45. Grow up, you know, whatever. And then time after time. And that's in line with all the presents she gave me and all the food I had to eat. And it's common. I know. I hear from a lot of daughters to bear that. But it's exhausting. Really, it is. And it's also such a mindfuck because you don't have privacy. You have to be there if it's bed 24 hours a day. Well, she respected my sleep time, but yeah, I had to ring her when I came from her home, coming home. I had to ring her and I had to do it with my home phone because if I used my mobile, she knew I was somewhere else. So yeah, and I had
She'd impose that on you.
Yeah, actually, yeah, and it wasn't with force. It was all by friendly and being nice, but she did, yeah.
And I guess the few times you did set boundaries, she bit.
Yeah, or she fell.
Mm-hmm.
She broke. She was in a sort of victim role, like, oh my, I can't handle this. And yeah.
Following up from the bike, you said it wasn't only the bike. It was that she imposed on you that she had to be on the dialing list of the first person that called if anything were to happen to you.
Yeah. Was it called the ICE or the SOS number list? Yeah. She insisted she was a number one. Yeah. And I said no, because I wanted my closest friends to be there because she couldn't handle that emotionally.
Yeah.
So I know my friends will call her and will find her address. So that will be okay. She's one of the first to be called, but not by the police or whatever. No.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. And I did make a life testament to decide. And that stems from that period, actually, to decide myself who is on my bed, if I'm in a coma or if I have dementia. My people had to decide and not my family as such. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I can keep going. Sometimes I pause because I know Bambos likes to take deep breaths and find beautiful questions. It's true.
I'm not really listening to what you're saying.
Like, I can see that.
I stopped listening because the impact of your of the energy, like my whole body is cringing.
Yeah.
So in a way to take it in also mentally, it's a bit too much for me.
Yeah. Sometimes I want to throw up when I hear people talk on the show.
Yeah.
Because I feel what it would feel like to be in those shoes. And it's almost hard to stay open to that reality to the point where it's like literally I feel I could go and throw up right
now. So by naming it, exactly what Andy shared.
And is it because of the story or do you feel energy that flows around here or what attached you? What is it?
Oh, just very empathetic. I'm very empathetic when people talk. So please be yourself.
Yeah, when we hear you, it's like they're words and those words have a meaning. And the more you allow that meaning to come into your system, it's not a rationalized thought anymore. It's an embodied experience. So when you explain this experience to Bambos or
I feel for crying.
I feel for crying.
And the reason I'm not crying is because I don't want to have another crying show.
Yeah.
But then if I feel that if I'm having that experience, I'm projecting that like, wow, Jessica is really holding herself really good right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. And thank you for the sharing, because what I realize is that I have a sort of large cry in my body physically of feeling not able to express myself in this. How do you explain this? I really don't know. I'm so glad you understand. But even then, I feel, and probably because I never was understood by that woman, by my surroundings, by the people around me.
And it's fucking great.
Yeah. For now, I make my living off it now. So yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You've become another wounded healer. Yeah. Transferring our wounds into something that others can also gain and grow from.
Like with all this sharing up to now, because I want to transition to something else.
Mm-hmm.
How are you feeling right now? Because I'm like your father, your brother might be watching this. Clients might be watching this. How is this? Like, I don't know what's the life for you right now.
Well, I'm quite aware of what I share and what I don't.
Yeah.
So that's also part of my job.
You're being careful, you mean?
Yeah, because there are lots more stories I cannot share right now. In a few years I probably will, but not now. So yeah. I'm quite aware of what I want to share, and I'm perfectly okay with this, seeing by my brother and my father and by people around me from work or private.
Yeah.
This is what I share, this is what I can share, and this also emotionally what I can share.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Let's agree, 5 years ago, there's no way on God's planet we would be doing this.
5 years ago?
Yeah.
So
obviously.
I was still alive.
Yeah.
I was at my old job at ING's.
Yeah.
I was stuck.
Yeah.
After that, my life exploded and I left. And one of the consequences of my upbringing in this family with his mother and father and brothers was that I was depressed for all my life. And only a few years ago, I think 5-6 years ago, I left that behind. And when I healed from that, I decided to do something meaningful with that experience. How did I grow out of this? How did I cope? What did I miss? So what can I bring others and share with others that I never had? So, yeah. And now I'm so lucky I can do what I do. You're touched. I fill in. What happens to you, Bambos?
Oh, I wanted to grab my energy bar.
Your energy bar? You're hungry?
Emotional eating.
Okay. Yeah, let's have some ice cream or fries or something.
And then I had the thought, is it appropriate to eat something because I can't deal with this? I don't want to deal with this.
How are you coping? You know, what I've found is the less someone speaks, the harder it is to allow it in your system.
Yeah.
Because I feel the things that aren't being spoken. So when they are spoken, there's a release. But when they're not spoken, you know they're there. And now you're feeling the tension of that, or at least I feel it in my body. And holding that is never easy, or not usually.
You shed some light about a lot of stuff happened. For instance, the most easy one is when my parents divorced when I was 10, almost 11. I shut down. I couldn't talk about it. No one understood because I was the second child in the class of the whole school, I guess, whose parents were divorced. And a lot of stuff was going on at home. It was totally chaos, and not a wonderful chaos. It was really a horrible chaos for me as a child.
Yeah.
And not talking about it, just the tension grew. But I wasn't able. I was shut down. It wasn't possible. There was no one.
Did you have like an understanding of what was happening? Because in my childhood, I wasn't even able to process anything. Things were happening, but I couldn't really put words to what was happening. I thought there was something wrong with me.
Yeah, when I was 12, I stood in the living room. My mother was gone already. I lived with my father. I looked around and I saw the people in my house and I thought, oh my God, when I grew up, I'm going to write a book about this. This is not normal. This is not okay. And I lost all the stories. Too bad. I don't know much. But when I was 12, I realized this is different. And then, next.
What was your reference? Your reference for that this was not normal?
That's a very good question. I think my inner value system, my norms and values, like the stuff that happens, and it was not only my mom, it was the whole dynamic. I was like appalled I hated some stuff that happened and it wasn't okay and it didn't feel okay. So it was my own compass that I still had then.
And what I find interesting is that when you say to survive, you shut down. And I think that at some age, just about every person goes through the shutdown experience, and some so dramatically because the trauma is so great that in order to survive, like, we have to allow ourselves to distance ourselves from the actual pain. I always think it's interesting because when we heal and discuss it, right, as we get older and we start to be able to bring it back to the surface again, I'm always fascinated that people judge that they've shut down emotionally instead of having compassion for why they needed to shut down emotionally in order to survive.
That's really big.
Yeah, because I think it's a great thing to shut down emotionally. When I say great, I mean contextually in a situation where everything else would have been, you would have just, you probably would have committed suicide.
Yeah.
So in a way, that protective mechanism saves a lot of us.
Yes and no. If you go too far with it, you get depressed and commit suicide afterwards. Anyway, so that's so far. That goes so far.
Sure.
There is one thing. When you say you can't, like, you kind of regret not remembering the details, I have the same. And I'm wondering, what's your explanation around that? Not being able to remember certain details. Is it so painful that
my oldest brother, he committed suicide. If I go back, and that are the easy, because I was 18 back then when that happened. That's still close to me, more or less. And those are painful memories. So if I think back of that, I know the memory rationally. But it's very hard to connect emotionally because if I do, it's sheer pain. And I was, as a child, sheer pain. I cried all the time because of what I saw. And I couldn't handle that. I just cried. So my system, I have to work. I have to be up and running. I can't crumble now. I won't. I have therapy. only a few years ago I started to have them because I pushed that away. I couldn't ask for help. I couldn't ask for support. And still now I find it so hard to admit my loneliness and my pain, my isolation. Mm. And the more I share, the more I feel included in the world. I feel connected to people. And the first time I started reattached to people, like I had a friend, I made friends here in the neighborhood. She decided to move and I was so sad. And I said, fuck, that happens when you're attached to people. When they leave, you're going to cry. Mm. It hurts. And that feeling of her leaving people because that happened too much, I didn't want to feel it anymore. So being healed in healing myself, starting to feel that kind of pain, yeah, thinking back then, it's too much. It's more than what happens now. If I now feel pain for losing Case, losing that friend, moving, it's nothing compared when you are a child. It's overwhelming.
Yeah. And you don't have the faculty even to make sense of it, right? It's just completely, you're no faculties have developed to help you integrate whatever is going on around you.
Mm-hmm. No, only when I was 21, I left home. I lived on myself and I got lessons in logic. Mm-hmm. So the art of reasoning and thinking. Then I started to realize what my mom did, what happened, what she did. She never knew. She was a natural.
Yeah.
But I understood. So, and therefore, only then I could stand up to her and don't let her into my mind again.
Yeah.
But it took me years. Even rationally, I understood. Yeah. Emotionally, I still couldn't defend myself.
Yeah, I think it's interesting how we always regress to a younger self whenever confronted with a parent. Like I in the book, the new one, you know, there was the chapter where I met a very high functioning individual, went to one of the prestigious colleges in the US, and I only knew him as the high productive individual. And then I visit him at home with his parents and I didn't recognize him. Mm-hmm. Like, I was like, who are you? And what did you do to the other one?
Oh,
just disappeared. And then I made, you know, my jokes because that's how I am, you know. Hey, why don't we talk about the family issues or something? And I could see the smile on his face trying to like contort to pretend like it was okay. And I'm like, and then finally, I'm like, we're getting out of here and having a normal discussion not by, you know, somewhere else away from the discomfort. Yeah.
Well, that happened when I was with my mom. And Inge called, for instance, she always said, oh, you're with your mom. Yeah. So
yeah, you hear it.
Yeah.
There were comments that came in early on in our talk as a word is treated unfairly. It's a positive word that is misunderstood. And Bola Lang, who is our champion for the show, I have given a lot of thought to this, and I thought it might even be its own show. The distinction between manipulation and influence. Because of your logic and my logic, we always know that everything is defined by the context of the statement. So whatever one defines as manipulation or whatever one defines as influence defines whether they may or may not judge it as good or bad, right? Yeah.
Another distinction.
Oh, great. Go ahead.
And that is if manipulation is used for the better us, for the greater good, okay, then you can say it's okay. But if you do it at cost of someone else for yourself, then it's not okay.
And I like that one, but I also have a challenge with that.
Yeah.
Because one may have the idea they're doing it for that way, but the consequence might be that you just fucked everything up. So I distinguish, I would say, and this is just mine, this is arbitrary. This is what we influence everybody all the time by our mere existence. You can't get away from it.
So, no, your breathing is also manipulation. So
Well, that's what I was going to say. That's what I want to say. Not manipulation, if we can. This is my my qualification, which may be wrong by other people's standards, and you know I'm okay with that. So we influence by the mere fact we exist. Yeah. If we go into a room and we don't even talk to another person, we're influencing them just by being in that room.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, but saying that and reading what Bole Lang wrote, I get that really miserable feeling again of not being understood in this. This is okay. What's happening here? Yeah. What's happening here is not okay. Yeah.
Keep in mind, he wrote that before we began discussing. So he didn't hear your story when he said that, just in his defense. Now I want to move to where I've at least said, okay, that's my qualification for manipulation. And it's probably my qualification for just about anything, and that's intent.
Yeah. Well,
so what's the intent of the individual? And then that would then say, okay, now if there's intent, and then that intent can be qualified, good or bad, which would be it's a value, of course, we're placing on it.
Yeah, I think I look at the outcome. If I look at my mom, her intention was in survival mode. She was trying to survive all her life.
Yeah.
So looking at her intent, it wasn't her meaning to do stuff on the cost of other people. Sometimes she did, and then we could laugh about it. I could caught her in this. And then she knew she was caught on making
with her hand in the cookie jar.
Yeah.
With her hand in the cookie jar.
Yeah, exactly. Making other people's lives miserable just because she liked it sometimes to do. And then we could laugh about it. It wasn't her meaning to do it at my cost or my brother's cost or
And I guess then what we're saying is, and this gets rough and we shouldn't go into too detailed because it goes into another level, but that's where it's impersonal. And we'd say the intent doesn't necessarily mean that the consequences aren't there. So although your mom may not have intended to be manipulative because she was only reacting from survival, the consequence was that she was manipulative because, and then we could take it one more level to say, actually, she was only manipulative to the point that you could be manipulated.
That's true. And as a child, you are always being able to be manipulated. And because of her not intended to hurt us, I could have compassion for her. Mm. There are politicians who are manipulative, and I can't have compassion for them because they do it on purpose on the cost of other people.
For sure.
Yeah. So I think for me, having compassion for people who are treating people bad or being manipulative or whatever, the intention is very important. Therefore, I can have compassion.
Yeah.
Something jumps out at me, and it actually comes from Andy's book, the first book, when Case asked Andy, why did your father behave in this way? Hmm. And then Andy had the realization, because he loved me. And I'm wondering, do I dare say your mother was manipulated because she loved you?
Some of her behavior, she did. Like wanting me to wear jewelry and have creams and stuff and like being a girly girl, that was to help me be that better woman to succeed in life. Mm-hmm. And there are more for that examples, me being a proper Jew and loving Israel is also a story of loving me because she wanted to make me good for the world.
Are you a proper Jew?
No. I fought it for years, my whole life. And a few years ago, I got a little book from a friend.
Uh-huh.
And there was a story of a man of 65 years old or so who was really resisting being a Jew like me. And I was thinking, if he's in the book, it was a Jewish book with all kinds of stories of people. Mm-hmm. If he's in the book and he's Jewish, then I belong there as well with my fighting this. Okay, I'm a proper Jew. Yeah.
Well, I'm not a Jew because mom was Catholic. So I always think of myself as Jewish because I got.
My mom was Catholic as well. And she was. Yeah.
Oh, is that right? Yeah, because she was raised Catholic after being sent to the foster care, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's more because I don't know how to call it. Gereformeerd. What's it called in?
Say it again.
Reformed.
Oh yeah, reform.
She was in the foster home. She was reformed. When she came out of that, she became Catholic. And when she, and in between, she was also in a cult, in a Christian cult. Mm. And in her late days, she became herself and became really Jewish.
So she's been manipulated her whole life, actually.
Yeah.
Well, she left all that as well. So.
I'm going to share with you one day, or I'll send it to both of you after the show. I wrote an article. When I was like 18 years old, I wrote an article that was the Catholic religion has mastered the art of manipulation and the Jews have mastered the science of it. Because each one had its own way of getting you to conform to whatever the norms were of that social life. And I must say I gravitated a little bit more to the Jewish side because you could speak freer, you could yell at each other. And it was almost like there was no, after you yelled, it was over and there was no resentment. You just kind of continued on. But if you did the same on the Catholic side, it was like, you're in purgatory for a good 10 years. You're not going to talk or whatever
Well, you have to go to a Reformed church or so. It's even worse.
Yeah.
Catholic is a party.
You wrote, I'm looking at it right now. It's 6 pages of stream of consciousness, right? This is what I have in my hand. What came up for you? What did you discover as you did this?
Before and after, I had a blank in my mind.
Wow.
Yeah.
So when you dig into the stream of consciousness, it's almost like you're channeling and then you drop out. I don't even know what I wrote. It's out.
Yeah. I was 6 pages and oh my God, where did the time go? You know? And for me, it feels all like stories. But yeah, she wrote 2 books, one of herself and someone wrote about her. Her story is so big that I thought, what am I talking about? You know, she's manipulating me. What are we talking about? Like, she's the one who had a hard life.
You also wrote in your stream of consciousness, to bring you back to it, that in writing the second book where somebody else got involved, she was very manipulative in that whole process.
Yeah.
Well, what did she do that was sort of made it hard for everyone just to write the story about the Second World War experience and so on?
She couldn't let go. She almost till the day she died, she still wanted to talk the story. I went to a medium a few months after her death. I was curious. And that medium said, I have a woman here and she is not done talking. Okay.
Yeah. Well, she just shut up. Shut up.
She's not done telling her story. So that was the, and I thought, well, fuck, this is weird. Yeah, this is my mom. Yeah.
Jessica, as we're talking and there's a lot of laughing.
Yeah.
I know in my own life, when something's really uncomfortable, like I'll tend to do a lot of laughing. And yeah. I'm wondering in about 9 minutes when we hang up and you'll be sitting there, screen is off, you're not online anymore. Yeah. Where are you at?
With both the laughing and the sadness. And the sadness is here as well. It's not gone. It's there. It's hard to connect to it. But it's never not there.
It's hard to connect to it, but it's never not there.
I noticed earlier on when we were discussing, there was a moment when you were going into a story from the past. And I saw this sort of conscious decision of you not to go there. It was like, oh, I'm not taking that door because I know where that door leads me. And I could see that for me, because I know the doors in myself, is that that's the protection that I have to hold to function in the world.
Yeah.
Because once I open that door, I become unfunctionable.
Yeah.
You have a door?
Well, I mean, I knew it from the past.
Okay. Yeah.
So when I, with Jessica, I've been lightening the load very consciously because I saw the desire to make sure that that door got to stay safe.
Hmm. And if we open that door, I'd still be okay. But yeah, and sometimes I encounter that place because of influences from outside. I fall. And one thing I'm very determined not to fall, that my life is too overwhelming. My past will be overwhelming my present. No, I don't want to go there.
Yeah.
But I'm searching for a way to let that feeling in, like I'm feeling now. But it has to be manageable, like, and not because I have to keep it under, because it's my ground. It's for me, it's feeling like I don't have enough ground to bear the weight.
Yeah.
And as long as I don't have that ground, and that ground is growing and it's getting firmer, but as long as I don't have that ground enough, I can't open that door fully.
Yeah.
I'm gone.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. I know that well, what you're speaking to. I think everyone is that it's interesting that when people do personal development work, I'll often be sort of weighing the how much can they absorb at this moment, because the foundation is there to integrate it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen that a lot of coaches or people think you need to get somewhere, or we need to get you to an experience, mm-hmm. totally ignoring the other individual's need for that safety and the need to be able to ground the emotion that comes up.
Yeah.
And it's scary for me to see that actually in the world, because it actually is presupposing without even knowing it that that's actually good, where it's an assumption, of course.
Yeah.
That it's
they talk from a firm ground, from a proper and warm and healthy background.
Yeah.
Can't imagine what it feels like not to have that ground, and you know, I don't have a family who I can call and afterwards know me all my life. I have my friends, my self chosen family, who know me since I was 21 or later on. There is no support for me. In a way, I do have very, very good friends. I know you will be there. Inge is there. Francis is there. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of people who will be there. I experience it with, for instance, when my mother died, what happened there. Mm-hmm. But I hang up. You ask Bambos, I hang up and I'm alone. I can call, but there's no hiding in a way.
Mm-hmm.
I have to be there for myself. Yeah.
I guess that's what I was sensing. And I know that also for myself.
Yeah.
And sometimes when I've been on the show and I unraveled things. Like sometimes I've even had a point where I just didn't want to get up the next day. It was like I was beaten up.
Yeah.
Bruised up.
Yeah.
So I can feel, I can kind of tune into the, even though we're laughing, like I can sense there's so much going on the undercurrent that my thing was more acknowledging from care that that I don't want it. The fact that you're here talking about it, I feel really grateful.
Yeah.
Thank you. And also thank you for sharing, because knowing this from you makes me feel not isolated and alone in this. So although we don't talk within a few minutes, you're here. Both of you.
Question for you. Mom dies. There's like two sides to it. I'm sad and thank God that shit's over. Like, how does it feel to reconcile those two emotions simultaneously?
Well, not simultaneously.
Not simultaneously. Nice.
I'm so grateful this is over. I've done it. I did my job. And now, after more than a year, I feel my mother's presence every now and then. And what remained was the lovely side of her, the side that was always in the background but never foreground. So I enjoy him more now than I did when he was alive. So yeah.
We romanticize the hell out of everyone that's gone. It's like they were so nice.
Do
you ever hear her voice? Like you did something as a habit?
No, I'm more of the feeling of the energy.
So you get the feeling.
Yeah, and it's like a warm blanket around me sometimes,
What's something that still happens today that triggers you and takes you back to sort of a regressed idea, like where you reacted to your mom?
Well, it happened a few times here and I shared it. Like when I become really emotional in not being understood and heard. When that can build, and then that's one thing. Yeah.
And you say it happened here while we've been together.
With this comment.
Oh, with that comment. Yeah.
Yeah. For instance. Yeah. Yeah. I shared it. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. And being manipulated. If someone is really trying to get in my mind and manipulate me or want something from me or shift grounds or change context, that kind of stuff, I freak out.
Oh wow!
You're like a sensitive manipulative detector.
Yeah, the subtlety. Yeah.
Like you tune into the undercurrent. But I'm wondering, do you experience openness to explore if what you're sensing is really true, or do you take what you're sensing so seriously that there's no space to explore what the reality is?
No, please let explore, because at the moment we are the other person is also open. Then problem's gone. But it's in not being open. And I sense there's double schedule here. How do you call that?
Yeah.
A double agenda.
This is not okay. But if he reveals his double agenda, problem gone.
Yeah.
Okay. I understand why you are doing this. Yeah, it's okay. Yeah.
I don't think you've thought that idea through well enough, Jessica.
Do I?
Just trying to see how I can manipulate you a bit before we ended the show.
Yeah. Like, I was wondering when that was going to come up, actually.
It's funny. I see, especially when it comes to training and coaching people, how someone with a firm voice can quickly manipulate another person if they're allowing themselves to be influenced, of course, by that person. And the more a relationship is... like especially with kind of a guru, a student type of relationship, it's really easy for the person, right, to be, we can make the distinguisher again, influenced or manipulated. But at the end, we would say they are always being influenced. And the question is then, to what degree does that turn into something that's beneficial to them? Or is there an ulterior motive from the person who's influencing them, right? Yeah.
Yeah. My face went so because I was thinking about early childhood trauma, and when you're used to loud voices, the childhood trauma kicks in and you shrink like you become 3-year-old again. So it's sometimes it's not a choice; it just happens.
Yeah, we had on a beautiful talk last week with the man that spent 20 years in prison.
Kenny
Johnson. And
it was a good show, by the way, guys. Watch it.
Kenny Johnson, really, really wonderful show. We're influencing them to watch another show. Kenny basically shared that he had to wake up several times in the evening to go to the bathroom from this childhood trauma that still was in his system. So although he had a lot of peace in his mind and he found a way to kind of find a space where everything always felt like it made sense, that was still in his body. Like that bodily thing was always there.
Yeah.
And I found that as well with me, that's the last, I thought, with our mutual mentor, logic was a big part of the breakthrough. How do you create a logical structure in your brain so that you can actually go back into the world and do thoughtful experiments? Mm-hmm. That's how I experienced that development. And then That was very weighted to the logical awakening, right? The brain awakening, but the heart awakening is another thing altogether.
Yeah. Therefore I had to leave all my two mentors in the past.
Yes.
Yeah.
Can imagine. And my two mentors, we shared one of them. He of course passed on, which I didn't say forced me. It like, I just went to where I would naturally go, which is more to the heart.
Mm. Yeah. It freed me. It didn't force me. It freed me to go there. Yeah. Although I miss him, but this part I don't miss.
No.
Because it also gave me space to go into that development. I was ready for it.
Yeah. I think all of us who were influenced or who went to Case as a support to grow, we all benefited from him. And then actually in his passing, we kind of had the torch that we now had that we get to carry on our own instead of having him support us.
I met him 4 times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Andy was telling me that I need to do logical training. So I'm going to ask you to send me the details if you recommend that person, by the way.
Well, we talk about it. I'll give you details. It's okay. Yeah. We share.
I'm not convinced that was a good recommendation.
We'll share, Bambos.
Yeah, it's okay. The person, to give him the credits he deserved, that first mentor, he learned me logic. He saved my life. If he wasn't there, I wouldn't be alive today, literally, because I would have killed myself because I was really getting crazy about my mom.
Yeah.
And a case, he gave me a life. So one saved my life and the other one gave me a life. With him, I start enjoying life and doing fun stuff. So
yeah. We've gone 5 minutes over. Thank you.
Thank you
for sharing. I know this was not like the thing you were looking forward to all week. So I'm really grateful that you came to be with us.
I mean, you were not looking forward to the point that you had to write.
Yeah. Anyone that has to write 6 pages to figure out what they're going to not say is really working hard. Thank you.
Thank you both. And good luck. Listen.
I think you manipulated me, but I never saw it as manipulation when we first met.
I mean, of course I manipulated
you. Because you were sensing there was so much aggression in me when we met.
When I said, if there's any aggression, then I'm not working with you anymore.
Yeah.
That was beyond manipulation. Those were setting conditions.
I know. I'm talking about also the way you were being with me as opposed to how you're being with me right now.
Oh, wow. Like, yeah.
Like I feel you that like day and night, like back then you would not talk to me the way you're talking to me now.
Oh, no.
You would not poke the bear. The bear would bite.
You mean then?
Yeah.
And so how would you describe it? Because I'm not exactly sure what the difference was. I mean, I can sense it, but I don't necessarily understand it as you speak to it.
Not that you were careful, but now you will make comments which potentially could, just to see if I'm triggered or if I'm not owning something. And you're not really giving it thought. And back then, I mean, this has been a new development in our connection.
Yeah, not everyone is a nail, and I don't only have a hammer.
Yeah.
So I don't think or believe that it's my job to heal or fix anyone.
Yeah.
So everyone goes at the pace that they're able, willing to allow their own development. And I really like when Jessica said it, and I felt that way very strongly, is that over time, the foundation of the individual changes. They can deal with more turmoil because they've got structures to support them through that turmoil. And I believe that really good coaches, they sense, okay, I've gone maybe too far here now.
Yeah.
So, you know, and to think I'm not doing this for me, it's for them. So if it's less identity, then it's not like, oh, great. Bambos, he conquered another, you know, it's more like it's a process and the process unfolds. So at the moment, I believe that you can hold a lot more tension than you would have been able to have held when we began working together.
Yeah, definitely.
And I wouldn't, and that's a belief and it may change, who knows, because it's not like this is a fixed state. But we've been through so much that in the meantime, I don't see that I have to be so conscious of what might, make you shut down, right? I mean, on the show, for those that know, we've discussed it, is that some of the show content you've had a harder time connecting to.
Yeah.
And then you've reacted and we've had the dialogue to the point, like yesterday's show, you really sat with it. And then by allowing it, you shifted the dynamic. Same was true for today. Because with Jessica, when you shared for you how it was for you, you heard the first time it would be great. You know, she's not here to discuss it, but the first time you discussed it, you saw she may have interpreted it as personal. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah, I did.
And then I talked through it, and then you noticed, and this is what I loved. You weren't seen by me as I spoke to Jessica about what I saw she might be feeling. And you didn't defend it. You said, oh, let me qualify at least. So you, in the past, you may have said, oh, I don't feel seen, I don't feel understood or whatever, and then maybe gotten frustrated. And here I saw you fully embodied, like, oh, Andy doesn't understand anything I just did. And then in my world, I'm always laughing because I'm like, apparently I wasn't vulnerable enough. Because if I was vulnerable enough, there would have been not much room for interpretation. And so what you did is you just went vulnerable. And that was it. Like, oh, that's when we see each other over and over again. And you saw immediately how Jessica reacted to it. She felt safe again.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the beauty I've seen is that, and you and I see you might be doing it just because we've been around one another. You just do it intuitively now. But in a way, when someone misinterprets you.
Well, yeah. Think about before our holidays, there was a period of I was suppressing, I was shutting down.
Yeah.
You were going to kick me off the show. You're like, I don't want to work with you anymore if you're showing up.
Oh,
like
come that. On. Qualify.
I'm just kidding.
Let's make sure, because there's a lot of people out there that think I'm a real jerk when it comes to you. No. Like, let's qualify this.
Can you just like...
No, I don't want that, because at the end, they talk to you afterwards and they say, why are you on that show? He's always beating you up.
And I'm like, yeah, I know it's really terrible. I'm manipulating. I'm getting love.
No, I said, we have an hour to be present with ourselves and the others.
Yeah.
And you said, it's a torture for me to be here. And I said, if it's a torture for you to be here, then you shouldn't be coming.
Yeah.
And that just doing it because you think you should do it isn't the right reason to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in that period, I was really shut down. I was going through shit and I was bringing it onto the show, but not talking about it.
Yeah.
And actually, your patience has actually given me the space to unfold. And I would say you kind of gave me a kind of ultimatum, or you're going to show up or you don't show up.
Yeah. And show up or don't show up. I said it to you. Show up or don't show up.
So in the showing up, it's like, oh, this is uncomfortable. I want to eat. I want to get up. I want to leave. Okay. Speak to me. What's he saying? What's he saying to me?
Yeah. And the funny thing was today you had the same.
Yeah.
And the first effort, because it's all about an experiment. The first experiment you tried with Jessica, it was okay, but it didn't quite hit. And the second one, you're like, oh, Jessica, I normally would go through a conversation. So you shared from your own experience and you saw how immediately she saw herself in you.
Yeah.
And then you connected. So and that's the where I see in life where people begin to learn by trying and saying what's works or what seems to connect and what doesn't connect. And when people ask me, like, why do you do what you do? I always laugh and say, because I tried everything else and it doesn't work. You know, it just didn't, like, don't think that I know what to do. I just know what didn't work till now. And I'm just excluding those or using them less, at least.
Yeah. And that feels true for me then.
Yeah. And I want you to experiment on the show. And
it feels like experimenting.
Yeah. And my whole feeling is that it can't go that bad because we'll always figure out a way to connect and we'll get vulnerable and we'll make sure everyone feels seen.
Or we cry when the ratings go up.
Yeah, exactly. So that's today. What a great time to be with Jessica. I was really grateful that she said yes to this. Thank you for being with us. Bye.
It's a wonderful chaos.
We like it that way.